think that it's going to be out of date in a couple of years. I love this. I think having a white in there, too, just makes the color pop. It's cool. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. I mean, you like to go to the bowl. Let's do this. You come here to 100% bowl. I get to do this. Yeah. Oh, okay. This is a good. All right. The adjoining bedroom will be converted into your green walk-through closet with a layout of both organization and storage. Month will connect elegant four-piece bath, which will be your perfect serious place. Also, the price of the property is $398,000, but they're also price of market value is about $370,000. Final budget? Everything you saw there, $80,000. I can have them 5 feet there again in $400,000. So they're basically, they're supposed to be the same price. Very comfortable price and rental budget with this house. Looking at the property side by side, there are major differences. The row homes have that basement suite. The other property is no basement suite. You get more square footage for rest of the house. One has your great kitchen and living space, and the other has the master bedroom. Why don't we leave? We'll give you guys a few minutes to think this over. Okay.
Okay. You made a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a lot of discussion. A few disagreements.
It's
a while to get on the same page, but I think back to there.
Four hours. They won't live back in 4 hours or contract
report. And the
there.
We have the basement, the row home, and we have the tenant with the high school. dollar, we want to bring them down as low as we can, but justify it. That's the best way to get someone moving in their price. They know it needs a lot of work, and that's why it's still sitting on the market.
As long as you can get it for $365, that is access.
Okay, well, we're going to sign the paper, get that deal in there, and then as soon as I hear back from them, we'll go from there. Hey, guys. Hey. Great business. I spoke with the sellers from there. They didn't like the offer.
Yeah, Hello, this is Cam.
Hey, I thought I'd be the only one on here.
It sounds like there's quite a few.
No, actually, let me refresh my thing. Usually it refreshes itself. Hey, Lindell.
Yes.
So I was going to call you because I have to thank you. We got in touch with Don Schmitz, and he's incredible. And if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have found him. So you are totally the man.
Yep. Well, I do construction, and I work for a lot of custom homes, and I get to know people.
He's impressive.
Yeah, that's what I was told. These are people that deal with the Postal Commission all the time, recommended him.
Well, I think we're going to be doing some work with him, and which is great. And I'm kind of excited, so we're still working on it.
Right. Well, that's the benefits of doing upper-end construction. You get to know people.
Yeah, and you get to know people who have the money to afford the upper end of construction.
Yeah, those are the people that can afford the fancy brickwork and stonework. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not economy related, so they get the work done regardless of the economy. So I learned that long time ago.
Did you know he was an off-roader?
You know, no, I did not.
Yeah, he's got a 69 Bronco.
Oh, cool.
An early Bronco. Yeah, I mean, that I'd like a 69 Bronco.
Yeah.
So he used to take his kids to the dune, and he's dunes, and he's camped there, and knows the area really well. And...
Yeah. I don't know him personally. I know Rick Margolis. He recommended him. And Rick's a developer. He buys lots on the ocean and the beach and gets it to the Coastal Commission and sells it to developers and conferences.
Well, hopefully I'll get to meet Rick, too. That would be a nice thing.
Yeah, and these are guys, I like the customers where they keep dealing. I've done three different houses for him over the years.
You couldn't find a more impressive guy. I mean, seriously. So, I can't thank
I'll
you enough.
Rick, I'll let Rick know, but that's who he deals with a lot, people like that. You know, he was giving me a couple names, and then he said, no, call this one. He'll be the best one.
That's great.
Right. That's good, because I was wondering.
Yeah, I know. You probably were. I was going to call you as soon as we had, you know, sort of a definitive answer, but I figured you'd be on tonight, too. So I'm glad you got on early.
Yep. Well, I'm trying to get on because I got to give my report tomorrow. We're going to meet live tomorrow, so. Be our first live club meeting in a long time.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
They're setting us up out. They're feeding us and they're letting us sit outside of the restaurant. So. The Zoom meetings get old.
Yep. Okay, is that Bruce or is that Jim?
That's Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Hi, Bruce. Hello.
Both of you say anonymous, so I always have to ask. We're getting people slow on tonight. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost 7.
Yeah, I know. I was on here 10 minutes all by my lonesome.
It's been a tough Monday for Mondays, work-wise, anyway.
Yeah, for a number of people, it was tough. Unfortunately, Bob Ham is under the weather and won't be able to join.
Yeah, he sent me a note.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wish he'd be well. This is frustrating.
What is? We got nobody on the call.
Pretty much. Charlie just got on, and Jared is on, and Vinny, and
hey,
Ed Sylvan.
Charlie.
Thank you. Yes.
And Vinny.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello,
hey,
everyone.
Good evening.
Oh, wow. George, is that really you?
It is. How are you, Amy?
Hey, George. It's really good to hear your voice.
How are you feeling?
I'm getting there, you know. Thanks to everybody's good wishes, then I'm open to any healing names, prayers, anything. You name
okay,
it.
Okay, well, good.
Who just joined with the 619 area code?
Hey, everyone. This is Brian Pepin. I live in San Diego. I went to Rigs and Brews event. Yeah, so glad to be here.
This is Amy. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Brian. This is Benny. I'm glad you made it.
Hey, yeah. Good to chat with you over the weekend.
Yeah.
All right. And I just got
cute little girls you got there.
How can little girls not be cute? 213 area code.
That's Tim Fanning of the Viewfinders, District 37.
What was your name again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
First name Tim, last name Fanning.
Fanning. ING. All right. Thanks, Tim. We write everybody
Tim
down. So. Yep. I see you. You were already in my system, Ken, so.
Okay.
I could cheat with you. For people that don't know, we have an online web manager, and it keeps track of everyone who has ever been on and we've entered a name for, so we know exactly who's attending in case we talk about issues that are, you know, more confidential. All right. And Spencer Norton. And Ken.
Hello?
Yep. Hey, Ken. Anybody who is talking behind them, just because there's a lot of people on, can you please mute yourself?
Yep.
Thanks so much. Hey, I'm going to mute. Somebody trying to find the noise. All right. Let's see. So far we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 board members. Let me know if I'm missing anybody. I've got Ken Clark, Amy Granite, Vinnie Barbarino, Jared McLeod, Ed Stoven, Bruce Brazil, Charlie Lowe, Mike Moore, Lori Lewis, and Dave Cundy. Am I missing anyone?
Yeah, hey guys, Mike McGarity.
Oh yeah, you're a guest, Mike. Not quite on the board
okay.
yet. I'm just trying to count for a quorum.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Amy.
Not a problem. I've got you down. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Can you check Ken Clark? I think that's marginally a quorum. But okay, 951 area code.
Robin Reed.
There's another 951 then, because I had you before, unless you dropped off.
Brett Mendoza.
I'm sorry?
Brett Mendoza.
Brett?
Yeah.
M-E-N-D-O-Z-A?
Huh,
yes. Good. I guessed. Welcome, Brett. And 760 area code, 595.
That would be me, Patricia Ureña.
You say that so well, Patricia.
Thank you.
I wish I could do that.
Okay. Hi, Patricia. Hi, Patricia. This is Ed Stoven.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on and telling us stuff.
Well, hopefully I I can tell you stuff.
All right, we've got Tyler Sasaki. Ken Clark, did you check about the quorum?
I have a total of 13 board members, and we have 9.
So, no, we have 10 now.
We have 10?
Yep. Yeah, we're good.
So we've got a quorum.
We've got a quorum.
All righty. And it's 7 after. Seven after seven. Tonight, today's the 26th of April. I want to call our first half of our annual meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. I'm glad you could all make it. Welcome, guests. We have some really special guests for everybody tonight. I appreciate you being on the call. Tonight, we're going to want to move fairly quickly. We have a lot to cover. I want to try to limit people if you're going to be commenting on something. Only please try to comment on really important items. If you have a general question, if you could email us, or if you come up with a question that has a real complicated answer, email us and we'll get back to you on it. So welcome, everybody. This is our second virtual annual meeting for CORVA. I hope this is going to be our last. Don't want to have to do this again. I like seeing all of you, and it's really nice when we can get together and meet all our members and everything. So anyway, let's get moving here. We have another one on.
Yeah, it's the five. Is that you, Austin? Oh, 510.
Paul Enstrom.
Who is it? I'm sorry?
Paul Enstrom with Getting Off Four-Wheel Drive Club.
Yeah. Hey, Paul. I haven't heard from you for a while.
I'm sorry.
Good to see you. Well, we're both still here. That's a good thing. Okay.
Glad to have
sorry
you.
Sorry about that.
We got one more.
I should tell everybody that this call is being recorded. It goes on our website eventually under meeting minutes for anybody who wants to listen or anybody who's missed the meeting. So that's just, and this is our preliminary of our annual meeting. The actual annual meeting where we do the voting and do awards is next month on May 24th.
Correct.
Ken, your turn.
Okay. Let's run through the board of members that are online real quick. I have Diane Mead. Are you with us?
No, she's not here yet.
She's not here. Oh, she's on waiting, trying to figure out what happened with the committee today.
Right.
Okay. Bruce Witcher.
He's not here either, but he said he would, so I expect
okay.
him soon.
We have Bruce Brazil. Heard
I'm
your
here.
Voice. Thank you, Bruce. Lori Lewis. Are you with us, Lori?
Oh, I took off. I'm so sorry. I'm here.
You're muted.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Jim Woods, are you with us?
Not yet.
No. No, Jim. Ed Stoven, glad to hear
I'm
from
here.
You. Good evening. Vinny Barbarino.
I'm here.
Good evening, Vinny. Bob Hamm is not with us tonight, unfortunately. We really wish he was. Amy, you are with us. Tully Lowe, good evening.
Yes, good evening. I'm here.
Good to hear from you. Mike Moore. Always there when we need him.
Mike is here.
Hi, Mike. Dave Cundy.
Yes, I'm here.
Good evening, Dave. And Jarrett McLeod.
Jarrett here.
Good evening, Garrett. All right. So those are our board members we have on board. Amy, would you like to introduce our guest?
I would. Lyndall James, Robin Reed, Ken Cordray, Jeremy Roll, George McDougall, Brian Pepin, Tim Lawson, and if I've got anyone's name wrong, please correct me. Tim Fanning, Mike McGarity, Spencer Norton, Ken Oyer, Brett Mendoza, Tyler Sasaki, and Paul Enstrom.
Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you all here. Next time, hopefully we get to do this face-to-face. Okay, has everybody reviewed our agenda? Are there any changes or anything anybody wants to add to it real quick? I don't hear anybody responding to that, so we'll just move on with our agenda. The first item is the legislative and lobbyist review. Amy, are you covering that tonight?
Yeah, I'll cover that tonight, and Ed Stoven wants to chime in. Please feel
okay.
free. We can talk about it at Carnegie or now. The procedure to call into to testify in front of one of the committee meetings in the legislature is really difficult. If I'm not mistaken, Jim Woods just joined. Jim, is that you?
Yes, it is. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Jim.
All right, so I will continue. So the wrong number was given out to those who wanted to do a Me Too testimony and agree with a side. The committee room was changed at the last minute. The number was changed at the last minute. The time was changed at the last minute. But I'll go over Diana's testimony when we come up to the Carnegie portion of the meeting because it really was incredible, and I think everyone deserves to hear it. One of the things with Carnegie is it doesn't seem like District 36 or anyone else is fighting the Carnegie bills. Anyone who knows somebody with District 36 or District 37 or anyone else, I mean, we have 9 SVRAs in California. And we need to protect all the SVRAs, and Carnegie is very important, especially to a lot of Northern California people, and the opportunities that this expansion area will give to side-by-sides and four-wheel drive is really important because we have no other opportunities of this sort in and around the Bay Area. The closest other for four-wheel drive would be Hollister Hills, which is great. It's a great park, but it's not the same. So Kathy has done a great job in shepherding through our AB 232, which is by Assemblymember Gallagher, and that is what we call our reciprocity bill, and it has sailed through every committee meeting on a consent calendar with no objections. And basically what that is, Bob Hamm wrote it, and it's so any states that don't recognize California green stickers or red stickers, when our citizens go to recreate in their states, they'll have to buy an out-of-state or a non-resident sticker when they come to California. This started with Arizona not recognizing California OHV permits as reciprocal in their state, and it's kind of a shame. But the bill, it only affects those states who don't recognize our off-road recreation enthusiasts, so it doesn't harm anything else, and it creates a little bit more revenue stream for the state, which is good. We are losing power by leaps and bounds in the legislature. The Sierra Club has kind of declared war on anything to do with OHV besides our bill. It is disturbing, and it is has the capacity to really affect everything else we do. And they're so pleased about their perceived victory with Oceano Dunes and the Coastal Commission that they now decided to completely go after anything to do with OHV. And there's problems with the replacement red sticker bill, which isn't our bill, but we're watching it because it will affect our members as well. And we don't exactly know how this is going to play out. So we don't want unregistered motorcycles in the state. So we're going to do see what we can do to help, even though it's not our bill for right now. But if we want to protect even Prairie City in the future, we're going to have to consider some other moves. As Ken wrote in his report about starting a PAC, no one likes the idea of giving money to politicians, but that is what made our opponents so successful. And our lobbyist is telling us that we should. Again, anyone with background noise, if you can please mute yourself, that would be great. Thank you. Or else I'll have to mute everyone. It's very disturbing, the sense I get at the legislature. We are trying to work with state parks to shepherd through a bill to reauthorize our OHMVR commission, and we're not exactly sure how that's going to work yet. So the bill, we have the bill language, and it's a copy of the legislative report that was given after the stakeholder group that Bob Hamm and I participated in, and a number of environmental groups, state parks, legislative representatives, and just so it was a very mixed group of people, and we did come to conclusions, and hopefully those will be that will make up the portion or the component of the reauthorization bill, and we have to see how state parks is going to play that because they are our partners. But to say that it's difficult at state parks right now, I think, and protecting OHV access would be an understatement. So it's something that we're working on, but something that we need to be aware of and look very strategically at what we can do and how to combat it. So the sense that I'm getting is everything that we've done before is great, and we've had some successes in the past, but we have to think more seriously about doing more, doing better, expanding our coalition of groups that we work with. That would really help, but those kind of things. And to keep us on time, I'm just going to ask if there are any questions so we can move on because it's 7:18.
Hey, Amy. Nick Harris called me after the AB 1512 just now. He said he had 28 people online ready to oppose the bill, and none of them were able to get through.
Well,
he didn't understand. He used the same code that I used, and I managed to get through.
Right.
By the way, I was the only person to get through.
Yeah,
which is just weird.
Diana checked
me. Good job, Ed.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know what I got. I came in at the last minute too. Nick had been on for hours, so don't throw the anime under the bus too far because they cried.
No, I'm glad to hear it. If I was wrong, I fully apologize. Mea culpa. There's a 916 area code. Callan, is that you?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Callan. We just double-check everyone who comes on our call, and the call is being recorded.
No worries, Callan.
All right. So,
Ed?
Go ahead, Ed.
Do you have anything to add besides the vote tonight, the phone difficulties?
Oh, I got piles I could talk about. I don't want to drag us down too far. So, AB 232 passed out of assembly. We're happy about that. All the other bills did what we didn't want. SB 227 goes to committee tomorrow. It passed through transportation. tomorrow it's Senate Natural Resources and Water. The committee assessment is not very good for it, and I wonder if it's going to die tomorrow. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to go on and say something nice about it. Just in case, a few weeks ago I bought a brand new Husqvarna 450. So it may last me a while. SB 799 passed through not too long ago, and we're happy to have Kathy helping us. I have other stuff. Maybe you want to wait for a different time, or do you want to hear it?
No, we're going to move on because we have a pretty strict schedule, so we can always loop around to it afterwards, but let's go on. Ken, do you want to introduce our first guest? It's 7:21.
Yes. 7:21. Our first guest is Patricia Urena. She's the chair of the OHMVR Commission.
Hi, good evening, everyone, and thank you for the invite, and President from CORBA, and thank you, Amy, again for the invite. I've been wanting to get on CORBA just to look at your agenda, but every time I come home, I find myself cooking for my son. So I wanted to, first of all, thank all of you that are so passionate about all the things that you do, and I'm hearing that you're having issues with getting, the code for talking and testifying before some of these bills that are before the Senate and before the Assembly. Well, first of all, I want to tell you that this is my second appointment with the OHMVR Commission, and I am currently chairing this commission. I kind of started chairing by default when Deputy Director Sarah Miggins became our Deputy Director. And so at that point, I was the Vice Chair. So so that you all know that my Vice Chair is Vice Chair Whittem, in case I'm not on the meetings, and she will be chairing our OHMVR Commission. I do have to tell all of you that since coming onto the commission, I've been pretty vocal about some of these issues that are coming before you. I did tell Amy I had a conversation with Senator Glazer, and we talked in length about the Carnegie Tesla expansion. And I actually offered him an invitation to come to our next OHV meeting, and I told him I would really like for you to be at that OHV. I'm hoping that it's not Zoom, but it sounds like it will be Zoom in July. And that way he can really explain his reason why they want to have us buy or sell it for $9 million. I said $9 million doesn't take us very far. And what area are you think that we should buy to add more trails? So a lot of questions needed to be answered, and they weren't answered. So I said, I think it's a great invitation to come and talk to all our OHV community and let them know why this has been in litigation for so long. The other thing I want to tell you is that the OHMVR Commission is very diverse. Thanks to SB 249, we've been able to come up with some really good standards. And the state of California has changed quite a bit since the early 80s, late 70s. And we're seeing a big change in California. And what I've seen is there's a huge need for the outdoors. And especially now with COVID, everybody wants to be out there. I live on the southern tip of California, which is Calexico, and I'm really close to Ocotillo Wells. And Heber Dunes is only 5 minutes from my house. So we're full of riding areas, including federal lands like the Superstition, Gordon Wells. So we have a lot of riding area. And on any given holiday, our numbers have increased because other SVRAs have been closed, including Oceano. So we're seeing an increase of riders coming down to Imperial County. And when talking to the rangers, they said, yeah, we're getting people from Nevada, from Jersey, and from Northern California. So the numbers went extremely high. But some of the things that I want to tell you that through the OHMVR Commission, we're also trying to consolidate some of our ad hoc committees so that we, when we come to these meetings, we're able to interface and have some engagement with some of the issues that are here before us. And I will tell you that Vice Chair Whittem and myself are on the ad hoc committee for NIPAM Outreach and Inclusion, because one of my heavies is safety and education, getting more young members of our community throughout the state to become engaged in what's going on with OHV, because that's where the future is. OHV is not going anywhere. And I know in working with the state, they're working to bring the best path forward, and we're anticipating that, you know, something happens with Oceana Dunes, and I know that we have to rely on state, and I truly believe that the state parks has done a tremendous job at advocating and trying to get some things done, but it's very difficult to get through some of the things that we're dealing with right now. I do want to tell you that I also am going to be requesting a joint committee meeting with the Coastal Commission. I'm hoping that happens this year. I really truly believe, and I've explained this to some of you before, that we need to connect with other commissions so that they understand what we are doing for the benefit of Californians, and we understand what they're trying to do within their committee to benefit Californians. But we have to have some kind of a balance, some kind of connectivity, and we just can't say, well, my commission's better than your commission. I really think that we need to talk like human beings and say, hey, what can we do to make this happen for the benefit of everyone? And after sitting in a 12-hour meeting with the Coastal Commission, I didn't feel that we were even heard or listened to. So I just want you to know that you have our support. We're trying to do the best that we can to continue to honor the SVRA parks that we have, because if anything, we need more. Because from what I've seen, the numbers, and even some of the conversations we've had with the ad hoc committees, that the numbers are growing even more and more. And I've talked to Ms. Granite about this. The people that bend all these OHV vehicles to all these riders out in California need to be involved as well, and they need to start lobbying for the vehicles that they're selling to everyone that's using them, because they need to understand that there's other people out there in the Senate and the assemblies that are trying to, you know, kind of delete some of these programs that we have, and we just need to be a little bit stronger in our voice and advocate. And you can't advocate if you can't even get a phone call in. So I do want to tell you that we're doing the best that we can. I'm really happy working with the state parks and hoping that we can come up with some good decisions that will help all of us continue to recreate out in the outdoors. I'm very passionate about safety and education, as I mentioned, and trail conservation. I think that we can work together with the public works planners and coming up with some really nice trails for everyone to use. I do want to really work hard on making sure that we have trails that are accessible to people with disabilities and our aging community, because I think I'm the oldest one on the commission right now, and I'm a motorcycle rider, and I can also ride ATVs, but motorcycle is my passion, and that's, I'm an instructor for young children to learn how to ride these bikes safely, but I'm also teaching them about the environment, that you need to protect it, you need to clean it, you need to honor it, and you need to be a help for the future of OHV. So trying to get these young members involved, and just with the meetings with the ad hoc committee, people are coming out of everywhere, women writers, people from the disabled community, the diverse group of Latinos, Asian, African-Americans. I saw them all at Tierra del Sol when I was out there this past month, and the numbers have grown tremendously, and they will continue to grow, especially now that everyone knows that there's a need to be outdoors. So I hope that we can continue to have this dialogue with all of you, and that we can continue to have these commission meetings where we can come up with some good solutions. But one of the things I don't want to do is I don't want to polarize anyone. I want to listen and continue to understand everything that is in the best interest of Californians. So with that, Amy, again, thank you for the invite. I appreciate this, and I hope that we can continue to do the work that's been assigned to us. And it's not an easy one, but you know what? We're doing it because we care. So thank you again for tonight, and I'm probably going to stay on a little bit longer to listen to some of the rest of the things that you're talking about.
Well, thanks, Patricia.
Yes, thank you.
You want to call for any questions?
Yes.
For Commissioner Urania?
Any questions from the from membership or board? I'd like to say, Patricia, that I've been, you know, trying to attend the meetings that I can, and I think you're doing a fantastic job and have been a great addition to the commission. And thank you for all the work that you're doing, supporting us. I realize that the commission really supports off-road. It's apparent that everybody on the commission right now is truly in support of off-road. It's very refreshing.
And you're correct. We're all very passionate about it, and we have conversations, you know, within each other, and say, hey, what can we do, you know, before the next meeting? And we're just trying to be prepared for everything that's coming before us. And we're hearing you regarding Carnegie. We're hearing you regarding Prairie and all the other SBRAs. We certainly will do our part, what we have to do. But I think maybe in our conversation, we really need to bond together and make this happen within the voting power, because this is where it all ends up.
True. Yeah.
True. If no one else has a question, I'm going to ask a question. We've been really lucky. Well, there's a couple of questions. So we've seen participation in the OHMVR commission meetings increase exponentially with the advent of Zoom. So just a quick question. We really want to get back to face-to-face meetings, but is anyone considering a hybrid model so we can still allow people who are working and can't travel that far to comment on the meetings? Because we don't want to lose that participation.
I was asking about when are we going to stop the Zoom, because I'm tired of Zoom. My job is all about Zoom, and I work in parks and recreation, and we're slowly starting to go back to our real world. And until the governor allows us to do any travel or to do anything like that, we're still under that his guidance as to when we can actually meet in person. But I think I want to say that I'm hoping that by the October meeting, we'll be able to do person-to-person. And that's one of the reasons I said I want to do person-to-person joint meeting with the Coastal Commission. I don't want to do Zoom. So, and you're right. Zoom is okay, but, you know, it's nothing like being in person.
So do you think a hybrid will be possible where people can still call in who may be working?
I can ask the deputy director and see if that's a possibility to see if we can do a hybrid and see where we go from there.
Okay. And I had another question. So we know the OHMVR Commission is largely advisory. What they do is approve general plans for SVRAs. That is one of the tasks in statute that the OHMVR Commission has specifically. But your voice is really important to the OHV community. What can the OHV community do specifically to help you, when you send out the letters, have a bigger voice or a better voice? Do we need to contact our own legislators? Would it help if we distributed the letters? Is there something else we can do?
And you're correct. We are an advisory board, but your group definitely have a voice in the legislature, just like everybody else does. I think that's where you strengthen your voice and you strengthen the OHMVR program, because I think we've been stigmatized in a wrong way, and I think people need to know that if anything, the OHMVR is more of
commission that is looking out for the preservation and conservation of trails and managing, you know, everything in the most possible way that has great standards. Other states have been looking at the state of California for their standards because we're regarded as one of the best areas to manage OHV riding. So I think you really need to strengthen in that area. Again, you need to have people on the corner that can vote for these issues, that understand who we are as an OHV commission, and we all need a bigger voice. And everything that you and everyone that comes before the commission, I take note of. I have a binder full of notes, and every once in a while I go back and I go, yeah, we're talking about the same circle here. And when is it going to stop, and when are we going to make a fine note to when we can come to some kind of a conclusion? So with all the, you know, I've always been a great believer that where there's conflict, there's always resolution, but we need to come before everyone and gather all our thoughts and our network and put them all together, and hopefully, again, it's for the benefit of all Californians that are using OHV trails and also the federal land. So hopefully I answered that question. Yes, we need a bigger voice.
No. Yep. No, you did. You answered perfectly.
Yes.
So we've got our work cut out for us, people. I think that's what Commissioner Urania is telling us.
We all have our work out. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This is Paul Enstrom. You mentioned, Patricia, I appreciate your joining the meeting. You mentioned that there were other commissions we should connect with in California. Is there an example of what other commissions that we should liaison with? And the second part of my question is, would it be possible to liaison the Department of Boating and Waterways or Department of Civil Aviation or other similar California commissions? Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. When I first came onto the commission, I want to say it was my third commission meeting. We met in Folsom, and we had a joint meeting with the Boating and the Parks Commission. And it was a really good meeting because all three commissions came together. And one of the things that we did is we complimented each other for the work that we're doing. And you need to connect with one and each other, because I don't know what the Historical Preservation Commission is doing. I don't, you know, I heard a lot about what the parks was doing and voting and all their regulations, and it was great because all that information that we get as other commissioners, we get to share with everyone else, other constituents that we know that need to know about boating and fishing and things like that. So I think that those are good liaisons because they, you know, the boating people use water to do their recreation. And I'm sure that there's a lot of policies that they have to follow because it's a vehicle that they use, but it's in the water. Parks Department, you know, we work hand-in-hand with the Parks Division, and we're all looking into conserving our historical parks and our trails. And, you know, people want to hike, but there's a lot of people that can't hike. And in order to go look at at these beautiful historical sites, you have to get on an OHV vehicle to get there, or a Jeep, or some kind of other vehicle to get up there. So, yes, we do need to connect with other commissions that kind of fall in place with what we're already doing, and that's outdoor recreation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much. Up next is the OHMVR Division, State Parks. Callan McLaughlin, he's the acting chief of the division now. Callan, you got a couple things to tell us what's going on in state parks and how you're looking forward to changes and coming out of COVID and all the other wonderful issues we have within the division.
Yeah, thank you, Ken, and thank you, Amy, for having me. I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm down in Carmel at some training, so I'm sitting in my hotel room on my phone. My name's Callum McLaughlin. I'm the acting division chief. I'm kind of filling in for Brian Robertson, which has left some huge shoes to fill, but I'm just trying to keep us going forward and trying to get my feet underneath me and learn as fast as I can. I'll give you guys just real quick brief history of my background. I've worked for the department for about 20 years, including seasonal time. Last 15 as a peace officer. I've worked in Orville, North Coast Redwoods, South Yuba River, the division, Ocotillo Wells, and Anza Borrego. I will say a personal experience that OHV was probably the biggest defining moment in my career that actually kept me in this profession. I had spent my first 5 years at regular parks. I was pretty burnt out on the job, and I took a chance and went down to Ocotillo Wells, and I heard a bunch of horror stories going in. OHV was like Mad Max and the Thunderdome, and I got down there, and it was so refreshing dealing with the users that were so helpful, so kind. I mean, I was on a medical my first day, and they were helping us stabilize the patient, helping us secure an LZ, making sure that the person's bike was taken back to camp. I was just blown away, and it really restored my faith and the job and the profession and the department. So it was very, very rewarding and very eye-opening working for the division for OHV, and it was just the best thing that happened to me in my career. I've worked on the Rubicon a lot with Vicki Sanders and Placer County, El Dorado County, and the different forests up there. And now I'm in the division. I've been there the last 3 years or so, off and on. I was a superintendent handling our law enforcement OHV LE class and helping with the LE grants. And then Brian is retiring, and I kind of stepped in February and started doing that. So some of the stuff that we've got working on right now at division is, we're coming up into our busy season in the summer, helping with deployments and kind of navigating this whole COVID thing. We'll be helping out in the Rubicon again and helping out on the Fort Ice with the forest and the Placer County and El Dorado County. We're right smack dab in the middle of grant season. I think we're giving about $32 million this year in grants. And we're going to start working on some PR campaigns to really try to get some messaging out to really educate the people and the public on everything we do within the division, not just OHV Recreation, but a lot of our resource management and protection and stuff like that. And then I wanted to kind of give some update. You guys were asking about commission meetings. We are looking at doing a hybrid model going forward where it will be an in-person and a virtual. So for people who can't show up, I don't know when we'll go back in person. It's just we're still waiting for direction from the governor's office on when we can do that. But I can tell you all of us are itching to get back out and be doing those meetings. It's been a little rough doing them in virtually going forward or doing virtual ones. We really lose a component out there when we go out and do the tours out in the field and be able to kind of highlight a lot of the recent projects and the good stuff that's been happening in those places. So we're looking forward to doing that. So that's just kind of a real quick down and dirty and what's going on. Like I said, I'm brand new on the spot. I'm just trying to get my feet underneath me, but you guys need to get a hold of me. I have an open door policy. Please reach out. I'll be glad to talk to you guys, and whatever we can do to help, I'll be glad there to help you guys.
Well, that was a lot in a short amount of time. I have a bunch of questions for Callan, but I'll let everyone else go first.
Sorry about that. I was on mute.
I figured that was built in.
Callan, we really appreciate you taking over for Brian Robinson. He's was a great director, and I'm sure that or chief, and I'm sure you're going to do a great job too. Do we have any questions for Callan?
Yeah, this is Vinny. I got a question. I don't know how appropriate this is, but Callan, what can the commission do as far as this Oceano Dunes? Are they taking any action, or I'm not really sure.
I'll be completely honest with you guys, and I'm not blowing smoke up you guys right now, but I really have no idea what's going on with Oceano. That's our department still kind of processing all of that. Everything Patricia said is really what can happen, and really you guys, the ones who are going to need to get vocal with it too. I wish I had more information. I know this was going to come up. I really don't have any information on Oceano. So I apologize on that, but I'm just in the dark as you guys. We're still going through all the process of what we can and can't do, and this is such a unique situation with two state agencies like this, so there really isn't any information that I can update on at this point. So I apologize.
All right, well, thanks for being honest. So.
Thanks, Vinny. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
Permits for events.
So permits
when
for
can
events.
We...
Go ahead, Amy.
Yeah, no, when can we start having events again at State Park?
So, again, they're working through that right now is my understanding, and they're still having to navigate through the tier system in each county. I'm sure you guys have dealt with that. I know I've dealt with trying to figure out what I can and can't do in my own county. So I know that they're working towards getting the permits out and going. It's still trying to navigate through all that. So I don't have much of an update. I'm starting to sound like a bad broken record, but I that's where we're at with the permit process.
Well, Corva usually does a Truck Haven Challenge at Ocotillo Wells in January, and I'm hoping this year that we'll be able to go ahead with it. We also usually do a family fun run either in August or September, and that's through our clubs, most notably Point Magoo Four-Wheel Drive Club. And you can understand that organizations like ours, we're not the only one. We really need these events. So is there any consideration, and will state parks give us the permit fees we've paid? Have been reasonable in the past, but it would be great if state parks can see their way to give a little bit of consideration because we've had to cancel so many meetings. Can you put word?
Yeah. No, trust me, I get emails me and Sarah do from Don Amador daily about this. So trust me, we want to get some normality coming back for the parks and for users and everything else. So I'm really hoping, you know, with the June 15th and some of the dates that are coming up, that a lot of this stuff will start to loosen up. I would really suggest you guys work with your local parks and really start talking with them, because they're going to have the better idea of what the counties are going to allow them to do and not to do. But I'm hoping, Amy, that your stuff by January should be hopefully, knock on wood, going again.
Well, remember the part, too, about the discount for the permits. That was sort of tongue-in-cheek, but not really.
Yeah,
we have to save money wherever we can.
No, I know what you're saying. I don't know how that's all going to work. I know that it's been there's a lot of we're dealing with this with other forests are dealing with it too. It's just there's a lot of people who I'm not going to say they lost money this last year because of all the runs, Jeeper Jamborees, one up on the Rubicon that aren't able to run their events and that's their big money maker and stuff like that. So I'm hoping a lot of the agencies will be understanding of that and try to work with them so that they can, you know, get their start to recoup some of their costs and be able to start getting money back in their accounts, so to speak.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a completely different question on the grants. And I'll understand if you don't have complete figures, but the grants provide, and for people who don't understand that 80 to 90% of the opportunities throughout the state are actually on federal land. Some county land like Stanislaus County and Frank Rains and LaGrange, OHV parks, but most of it's on federal land of Forest Service and BLM. The money they get through the grants is their lifeline, literally, for keeping opportunities open. Do you know just roughly what kind of response grant applications that the division received this year?
They were healthy, yes. I mean, they're obviously, I know talking with Sixto, the amount of money being requested is more than we're going to be able to fund. So, like I said, I think we're at around $32 million, what we're looking to be able to fund this year. So it's a little bit down from last year, but that's, you know, with the way the economy's been and everything else, it's gone down. But there's been a lot of grants coming in, and then I'm more usually involved with the law enforcement one, so this is the first year I'm kind of starting to look at some of the other ones. But there is a lot coming in for sure.
Okay. And how can people, do you encourage them to work with their local Forest Service? I know Bruce Witcher, who is now on the call, as is Diana Mead. Welcome. I know you guys got on before. But Bruce, for example, works with the Los Padres all the time to submit grants. But it can be difficult working with the Forest Service at times. Can the division do anything to help the grantees or help get work done on the trail?
In what way? In what way, Amy? I mean, what are you? As like asking the Forest Service, we can try to be the go-between and work with the Forest Service to help.
Yeah, that's what
that
I'm
happened.
Asking.
You know, I deal with the Forest Service a lot too, and there's times where I'm just as probably as frustrated as you guys are, because I'm just, you know, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me, but it's a big deal to them. So what I would suggest, if you're starting to run into that, like, reach out to us and we'll try to be that go-between, and maybe we can kind of work and have a meeting and talk it all out and figure out what we can do to make this, to maximize this. Because, to be honest, I mean, what you guys provide is a huge part for their match, right? You guys are doing stuff down there where they can claim that as match money, as a volunteer money, and that's another part of their application as far as are you working with volunteers? So I would hope that they're working well with you guys. I realize that, you know, that's naive at me at times to think that it's going to be perfect throughout everything, but if you run into issues like that, I would say reach out to us at Division and let us see if we can kind of facilitate something and work with them and be kind of that go-between to try to get something worked out so it benefits not only them, but it also, you know, the people who want to volunteer and go out there and help are able to actually go out there and help.
Okay, and since we have a couple of minutes before we have the next guest, you were in law enforcement specifically, a peace officer for so many years. We have a lot of different people on the call with all different interests, motorcyclists, UTV, ATV, four-wheel drive. What can somebody do? There's so many new people on the trail this year, and those of us who work closely with the Forest Service have heard over and over again and with the BLM about the amount of trash on the trails, the amount of difficulties on the trail, and yet even as a tread trainer, I'm sort of not going to recommend that somebody actually approach somebody else. So how can we get the people who are new to off-roading and new to being out on a trail, what can we help them do to obey, you know, the rules of the trail, so to speak? You know, pack it in, pack it out.
You know, I would say, you know, I get not wanting to confront them and stuff like that, but where we've been successful on the Rubicon is a lot of the groups that are they're taking ownership, and I would say they're self-policing, but not in the way that they're like they're being violent and confronting people. But, you know, hey, do you guys, you know, do you have a bag? Do you need a trash bag? Hey, do you guys got a wag bag? You know, and you can do things where you can offer stuff to people where you're calling them out, but not necessarily calling them out. You know, I think really just trying to educate people. I know a lot of different places they'll have like stewards there at the entrance to a trail or something like that, and they're passing out that different trash bags, whack bags, stuff like that, and just kind of educating people on that. I mean, the big thing is we deal with it a lot. We got so many new users, and I think some of it, the people just don't know what they can and can't do as far as, like, where they can and can't go off-road. You know, the pack-in, pack-out, I would hope most people know that they just can't litter anywhere, but some people, you know, just do it. But, you know, I would say really, really trying to educate people. If you're comfortable talking to them. If not, you know, really trying to maybe even talk to the people who are the land managers there. And what we've done at Division quite a bit is we've been working with the forest, trying to pick our outreach team and some of our law enforcement team and out to go out there and just educate people on that, because we've had such an influx of users coming out from different areas to recreate that just don't know maybe some of the laws in California. They're coming from the Nevada side and stuff like that.
One last question, which is probably the darkest question. You're closest to everyone else in state parks. This is a tough question. I know Sarah really well, and I consider her a friend. But is everyone on state parks, are they supporting us? Are they on our side? I think I'm asking the question because people really need to know this, because they don't have the opportunity to interact with everyone else in state parks to understand, are they working for us?
So I will say this, and I'll answer completely honestly. That I would say times in the past, a few years, I did not feel that way, and I probably shouldn't think it'll get me in trouble. But I will say that, you know, my experiences so far with Armando, it's completely changed. He is totally on board with OHV, which has been really refreshing, because I felt like I said in the past, with some of the management, even going back, you know, 5-10 years ago, that wasn't the case. I will say now that they're totally on board, and it's been very refreshing to me, because I finally feel like we're working together to try to solve a problem, as opposed to us being an us versus them mentality. So I would say wholeheartedly and honestly, that they are actually very supportive of OHV. It's been very refreshing. That was one of the reasons I agreed to take the out of class and kind of step into this role, was I didn't want to step in there if I was just going to be battling with other people. That was not something that seemed very fun to me at all. You know, Sarah convinced me, and then from what I've seen in my short time in this position, I would say that they're actually totally on board with protecting OHV and protecting the parks.
Sorry if that was a tough question, but...
No, just please don't let it get back. Well, I don't want to get called into the office and find out I lost
no.
my job. No, no.
No.
We thank you for your honesty.
No, I will be the first to admit, in the past, I didn't feel that way at all, Amy. And this is the first time I felt this way in a while. So I'm very optimistic going forward. And from what I've seen so far, I would say that I do feel like they're supportive of OHV, and they do have you guys' back.
I heard somebody wanted to ask a question.
Yeah, Kellen, this is Jared. I just wanted to say I've worked a little bit behind the scenes with Kellen on some things, and he has made himself readily available even on weekends and evenings. But anyways, I'm excited that you're the appointed chief. Look forward to working together on some of the various things we've discussed. And I actually am working on a permit for Hungry Valley right now, but we could talk offline about that. So anyways, congrats.
Thanks, Jared. And I owe you a phone call. I know we've been playing phone tag the last couple of weeks, but I'll get you a phone call here shortly at some point.
Sounds good.
All right. Any other questions?
I had a question. Sorry, Brett Mendoza. Just one of those things I've been noticing with what's going on with Oceano, but there seems to be a few different, they call them foundations, but they're just legal groups that have found an easy money button, especially attacking OHV, because they're the ones that write up these reports about environmental impacts. And they seem to just find a way to sue every state around here. They sue Arizona, they sue Utah. Is there anything we can do to help protect our parks from these lawsuits? Is there any legislation coming down the pipeline to maybe stop this gravy train for people?
You know, I don't know of any legislation coming down the pipeline. I would say really the big thing is, I've talked with Jared about this too, but, you know, there's a lot of good stuff that I sat in that Coastal Commission meeting that the park and the division, and I would say that the people that go to that Oceano do that the Coastal Commission just didn't bother to bring up. I mean, you look at our lease term program, you look at our snowy plover program, you look at a lot of the different stuff we've done as far as we have and stuff like that. I think a lot of it is just, you know, you or you guys can be vocal as being those voices at those other commission meetings and educating people on that, because they just want to focus in on a negative. And really, you know, as far as them taking money and latching on, I mean, that is what it is. It's always going to happen. It's unfortunate, you know, as far as legislation down the pipeline, there's nothing I know, but as far as what you guys can do to help is really get out in front and have that narrative. I mean, you guys know what's going on. You guys are the ones that are in the park. You're the ones in the forest. You guys are doing a lot of the work. You know all the good stuff you're doing. It's just getting out there and making sure people are aware of it before they try to latch onto a negative.
Thank you. And absolutely. And we need to police ourselves and make sure that we are being good stewards of the ground, of the earth ourselves, and educate everybody who, especially the newer people that are out there.
One last thing, Kellen, I'm just going to let you know that on Wednesday, April 28th, there is a meeting, since you're doing work on Fordyce and Rubicon. We have the Forest Service Sustainable Outdoor Recreation Coalition. Is that right, Kristen? I always mess that up. But we will be talking about opportunities and issues on the Plumas, El Dorado, and Tahoe National Forests with decision makers. So if you have a minute on there, we can pass you the information, but it's a great opportunity.
Yes. Send me the information if you can, Amy. I will tell you, I'm in training basically 8 to 5 every day this week for this mandatory training I have to be in. But send it to me, and I will see what I can do.
Okay, no problem. I just wanted to get in a plug for our...
I appreciate it. If I could say one last thing too is if you know I'll be the first to admit I don't have all the answers or anything like that. So if you guys have any suggestions, ideas, things that you think might help as far as you know getting those messages out there, or different things we could do as far as like education campaigns, stuff like that, please drop me a line. I'm all ears. Whatever I can do to work with you guys, and I look forward to working with you guys going forward.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, Amy, who's our next guest?
I'm going to introduce Austin McInerney, who is a facilitator with the Sac State Center for Collaborative Policy, but also is the facilitator for the Forest Service Sustainable Outdoor Recreation Coalition, or whatever the C is.
Collaborative,
but
yeah.
Collaborative. Why this is important is, as Ed Waldheim always used to yell at us and tell us, is that 80% of the opportunities in California are on federal land. And we have 18 forests in California. That's a lot of forests. It's a lot of opportunities. A lot of people on this call, I know Ed Stovin's involved with the Cleveland National Forest. Bruce Witcher with the Los Padres. I've helped groups in the San Bernardino, which has a huge, really great four-wheel drive trails, by the way, if anybody hasn't been there. They're pretty awesome trails. Jared and others from Point Magoo have been involved with the Miller Jeep Trail, and also with the Los Padres, and Mike McGarity and the Clovis Independence. Done a lot of work with the Sierra National Forest. So we have a lot of people that work really, really closely. If I've left anybody out, it's not personal. It's because I'm just looking at the people I know in the forest that they work in. All of us four-wheelers have been on Fordyce, broken down on Fordyce, and at times. And, you know, of course, the Rubicon. And the Plumas is just a beautiful forest. It's just a really pretty forest to drive through, and I've had the pleasure to do that. If we don't have a definition for what is sustainable recreation going through the forest, we don't get to protect what we have. And that's what Austin has worked tirelessly on. So with that, that's my introduction and my appreciation for all his hard work. And I'll let him talk about where the Forest Service is going, what his impressions are of how they're looking at recreation in California.
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy, and I really appreciate being invited to speak with you all. I've had the pleasure of serving as a facilitator and mediator for the California State University system for many years and have crossed paths with Amy on a number of projects going back, I guess, 15 years or so. I've done quite a bit of work on Forest Service projects up and down the state, starting with some of the travel management projects when that rule came out, and worked extensively on the INYO, facilitating a group with many motorized stakeholders involved that came up with the project that they actually implemented. And I think it was a testament to, as some of you have said, you know, the power of sort of collaboration and expecting government agencies to you know, necessarily do the right thing is a prayer in some cases. It really takes everyone coming to the table. And so in the work that I do on projects is really to try to bring parties together and hopefully craft solutions to projects that the agencies then can move forward with through the environmental review process and hopefully implement. And so recently, about a year ago, a number of interest groups on the conservation side, actually Outdoor Alliance and Winter Wildlands Alliance, they approached the Region 5 of the Forest Service here in Vallejo, California, and asked if there could be some support for creating a dialogue group that wasn't focused on any particular project, but was really just an opportunity to bring parties together to talk about recreation sort of broadly and to hopefully build some stronger relationships between groups so that when site-specific projects came up, hopefully these groups could work a little bit more collaboratively instead of just throwing really opposing comment letters at the Forest Service and then potentially litigating down the road. The Forest Service at the time said, yeah, you know, we see the value in this, and they had some staff changes. Some of the new staff that came into the public services office there really wanted to see more effective collaboration because they had been really stymied. They'd seen the number of lawsuits and the number of cases that had been objected making their way through the administrative review process, and they know that's not sustainable in the long run, especially over the last 5 years where the budgets had been really cut. Forest Service was understaffed, and they know that they needed to rely on volunteer groups to do a lot of the work to keep these trails and areas open. So they agreed to put some money that they happened to have a contract in place with us to provide on-call facilitation support on projects. And the Forest Service said, you know, let's put some money and see what you can do to get a collaboration going just to have these conversations. And so a colleague and I had calls with a number of parties and set up a framework that had some meetings start coming together. And Amy has participated in those meetings since the get-go and serves on a steering committee along with Don Amador, name I just heard in the previous speaker. He's on the steering committee, as well as some other groups that cross the spectrum from the Wilderness Society to motorized and whitewater rafting interest, as well as climbing groups. And this group is provided a sounding board for how we set these agendas up. We started with monthly meetings, then COVID hit, and the Forest Service was basically in lockdown and they couldn't hold meetings anymore. So we paused for a few months and figured out what was happening. And then the fires came. And as you can imagine, all hands were on deck to fight fires on the federal lands. And that with COVID created a real challenge for the agency as well as all of us. And it took a while, but we resumed meetings and they've been going monthly. And over the last few months, the focus of these meetings has really been on a couple points. One, to try to develop a definition of what sustainable outdoor recreation is. And hopefully then using that definition, we could apply it to projects that come forward and really use it to guide the kind of work that would be undertaken in developing recreation projects. Also, because of the Forest Service's desire to manage their volunteer groups more effectively, they have decided to split the state up into a number of zones, which are basically groupings of forests, 4 to 5 forests in each zone, and then assign staff to manage the volunteer arrangements within each of those zones. So with that information, we decided to embark on a number of meetings that would go zone by zone, starting in Southern California and move all the way up to the north, and hold a 2-hour meeting once a month to talk about those forests in particular and to bring the line officers, you know, the district rangers and the forest supervisor and key sort of executive staff at each of those forests to these meetings and allow to invite, you know, a group of anyone that's interested in recreation on those lands to come to these meetings. And so we are in the middle of that. We've held a meeting for the Southern California zone, the Southern Sierra, and on Wednesday, the meeting that Amy references Wednesday morning will cover the Central Sierra zone of Plumas, Tahoe, El Dorado, and the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit. And then May and June, we're splitting all the Northern California forests because there's so many that there'll be two meetings to focus in on the rest of the forests in California. And at the end of that process, which will be late June, we'll decide what to do with this group and how to move forward, because we don't have any meetings past June scheduled at the time. But the forest is willing to continue to support and fund my role, as well as the staff and quite a few forest staff from both the regional office as well as up and down the state have been participating in these calls every month. And the number of people that are participating continues to grow. And so last month's meeting, we had about 70 total participants. And I have a feeling, based on the forest that we're going to talk about on Wednesday, we'll probably be at the same, if not more, people. And so it's, you know, it's really an opportunity to bring people together and just openly talk about how do we manage the lands. And the forest has been very honest during the pandemic. They've seen increased users and just visitation across the state, to the point where some of these forests are literally overrun because they've been short-staffed, haven't been able to put out as many of the staff in the field as possible. And, you know, the public facilities have literally been trashed in some places. And it's been unfortunate. And so they've been asking through this group for groups that are willing to do cleanup work and just and be available as needed. And so some of those relationships have been strengthened, and some of the issues are coming out in the meetings, and the meetings are serving as an opportunity for individuals from different groups to build a little better relationship with some of the folks at the district ranger level that they would then pursue additional work with. And so we're in the middle of the process, and Amy asked that I could come today and just explain that and see if anyone has any questions or thoughts about what this group might do going forward. Be happy to share and have a discussion with you all. So with that, Amy, anything you want to add or specifically ask at this point, or just open it up?
I just want to add that I've been using the definition. So the definition, we worked hard on every single word. I mean, literally parsed every single word in that, to make sure that there was a universal acceptance of all forms of recreation, active recreation. Austin's an avid mountain biker, and I've been working with the mountain bike community a little bit too and learning about what they want. So during some of the committees, I'm on for state parks. I'm the only recreation person, so I want to make sure I represent everyone, including mountain bikers. The thing is, if we don't have a definition of what sustainable recreation is, we're lost when it comes to defending our trail because we have nothing to put back on. And what the amazing thing was to me is that environmental groups, even the Wilderness Society, worked alongside with us, and they heard our issues when we came to certain words and we said, no, that's problematic. We can't use that word. And they listened. And this has been one of the few times that I've actually had that experience. I don't know if anyone else can share, but one of the few times where this collaboration hasn't turned adversarial. And just adding that the collaboration in the INYO actually Corva paid for, or was a big part of that. Bruce Witcher was a big part of that years and years and years ago. But I've shared it with Tread Lightly, I've shared it with Novak, I've shared it wherever I can to show that this is something from California that is positive that we can bring forward to show that every form of recreation has a home in the Forest Service, and it's a way of protecting our opportunities. So I think it's really, really important. And the state actually can benefit by it too, because they don't have a definition of sustainable recreation. So hopefully we'll be able to bring it up to them too. And then I've talked enough and everyone can ask questions. So,
any questions or thoughts on...
This is Paul. I have a question. Thanks for coming to the meeting. But where do we find information on the SAC State Center for Collaborative Policy of Forest in California?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a really up-and-running website. This group has been around quite a long time, but it's part of the university, so getting anything done can be a little slow, to be honest. And so the updated website is in development at the moment. So the best way to seek any information is to get my contact info, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. Originally it was called the Center for Collaborative Policy, but they went through a big rebranding and the university did some shuffling. And so now it's the Consensus and Collaboration Program, and we're part of the School of Continuing Education. And so some of my colleagues teach in the public policy program at Cal State, and then others like myself are practitioners. And we work around the state, primarily for state and federal agencies, because we are a state agency, so it's quite easy for them to bring us on. And then we act as in a neutral capacity on public participation, and do a lot of work around water, as obviously we're in California. But my focus has been around recreation and public lands management. So I'd be happy to share my contact info, or Amy can, and we can talk offline.
But Paul, if you're asking where the information, or if there's a website devoted to the group, the collaboration, that's one thing we didn't achieve, because honestly, it was proposed that it be hosted through one of the environmental groups, and there were a number of a couple of recreation enthusiasts that found that unacceptable. So we need a neutral party that's not affiliated with anyone to host the website, and for the time being, that wasn't available. So that's why all of the work that we've done and everything isn't online, because that was one of the snags. Because if you think about it, and you're dealing with words, you don't want anyone to have the ability to change your words, because they control the website. So I have all the information on what we've achieved through the collaboration, but it just shows you can agree on some things, and other things you still have to work through.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That was a heated, very heated conversation, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, just to follow up on that, Amy, I think you're touching on something that's very true. And as you guys know, obviously working through Oceano Dunes, I mean, the issues are really tense right now. And so many projects, people are, you know, screaming at one another. So it's really challenging for the Forest Service, sort of caught in the middle in some of this, to try to decide, because they know whatever decision they make on a project is going to upset some number of people, and they know that that's not in the long run the best way to manage the lands. And so I feel, you know, having been working with a number of people over a number of years and seeing the changes at the staff at the forest, the staff that are in the public services department right now want to change the way they do business, and this is really this group was a push that's way outside of what they historically would have done. And, you know, it potentially is pushing the boundaries a little bit. They're funding it, but it's not a federal advisory committee
chartered group, you know, so they're sort of riding the thin line here to support an effort that isn't specifically tasked on a project, but they're just looking to create a space where groups can come together and talk about these issues and hopefully create some relationships and some agreements that will allow some projects to go forward. And they know that the demographics are changing in the state and the need for recreation is greater than it's ever been. And so I believe that, and I feel that the folks that are at the table here also believe that, and they want to see projects move forward and not just end up in litigation. But it takes people like Amy and others that, you know, represent these groups to come and participate and be there, and that takes time. So we'll see where it goes, but I'm enthusiastic and optimistic on how we're proceeding.
One just last quick question. For the people who are on this call who work really closely with the forest, and there's a number of them, would you encourage them to reach out to their ranger district, tell them they know about this effort, but that they want to make sure that their volunteers' efforts are not only recognized, but that they're allowed to get into the forest and get into their adopted trails?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the forest is still on a lockdown from holding actual in-person meetings, and I'm not sure when that's going to change. You know, people have been throwing around this June 15th date in California, things starting to open. So I think with vaccines now getting out there, we are going to see a loosening. There's going to be some more opportunities for in-person trail maintenance days. And after the fires that we've had and the winters, there's going to be a ton of work that's needed. And I, you know, people in the know that the motorized community is the one that primarily does the heavy lifting on a lot of the trail work, and are eager to get in there and clean out some of the you know, fallen trees and not whatnot. And so, I would encourage everyone to reach out through whatever group they're part of or to make contact with the forest and the district level that you recreate on and let them know that you're eager to help or, you know, bring resources when they're needed. And that'll go a long way.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Glad to have you working so hard for us.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you all are doing.
Okay, that concludes all of our special guests, and I'd like to thank all of you for being on the call tonight, and you've really supplied some great information, and we appreciate the job that all of you are doing. So now we have next on the agenda, Carnegie SVRA, Diana Mead and Bruce Brazil. A little confusion tonight, huh?
Just a bit.
What's going on?
Go for it, Diana.
Okay,
unmute.
I'm actually here. Scheduled for the Assembly Committee today, following the Transportation Committee. So it was estimated to begin around 6 for the committee meeting. And since we were the final bill on the agenda out of, I think it was 13, I've counted it several times, don't remember right now. It was 16. It probably was going to interfere with this call. Somewhere around 4 o'clock, that all changed. And apparently, and this is after a lot of back and forth, figuring out what occurred. A room came up where they could begin the committee meeting earlier. So they called it for 4:30. I actually didn't get word of this immediately, only because I was at work and didn't check my email because, you know, you just kind of assume everything's going great. And did get it around 5, so I knew we would still plenty of time. But I needed to notify everyone who was, we did an all-out effort to get people to call in tonight. Really pushed it, because people say all the time that they can't participate because they're working stiffs, and we know our community is largely a 7-to-4 type thing, or the guys who shower when they get home from work type people, as opposed to the ones who shower when they get out of bed. Anyway, made a major effort for that. I did receive the word that the meeting was going to be earlier. Tried to push that out to everyone, and did not understand that might mean that the Me Too, the calls that you make in that say, "My name is Diana Mead. I represent Corva, and I oppose this," would change as well. So numerous, I want to say approximately 25 people I know of, 4 intimately, who were waiting to call in and called in on the number that we had been given. And it turns out, according to Bruce Brazil, who researched it, they were actually listening to the Transportation Committee, because apparently these phone numbers are linked to the room. And we did not receive word that that number had changed, nor did we actually receive word that the room had changed, only that the time had changed. So, unfortunately, our opposition, or I should say those in support of the bill, were somehow well-informed, and they had 17 people who called in to support the bill, in addition to 2 people giving testimony. I guess in addition to this change, they changed the time as well that we would be allocated as witnesses to speak. So my 4-minute testimony was apparently shortened to 2, and I didn't realize that. So they had to interrupt me, and I tried to recoup and pull in some of the very, very important pieces and finished up probably in close to 3 minutes. But when it came time to voice opposition, my husband was sitting across the table from me, and he's hearing some bill, and he's not ready to make a comment or anything else. And Ed Stoven piped in, and that was it. So for those of you who have participated in the political spectrum, it can be incredibly frustrating, upsetting, take the wind out of your sails, because no matter what the results are going to be, we put a lot of effort into creating testimony that'll make a difference. and this was a dismal failure. But what we're doing, and the reason I'm on this call, is because I picked myself up and got back on my bike, so to speak, and we're going to submit a letter to the committee with the people that did try to call in and with their statements of their name: Rick Mead, California Off-Road Vehicle Association, Senator Glazier is my senator, opposed. And however many of them I collect tonight via email, the same email I use to notify them of the times and everything else. And I believe we'll at least register our voices. I believe I've recouped some of my feelings of self-worth, and we'll take it from there. But our testimony, I think, was good. We brought into it, Amy and I collaborated on this, that one of the things Steve Glazier brought up at the Senate hearing last week was the 30-30, the governor's executive order, that state parks are actually already in conservation. They're not part of this order. And I did mention, of course, the elite elk hunting operation or enterprise that operates over the hill. And it did get the legislative nimbyism in. I did have to cut out some other things that we so carefully crafted, but I think the message might have gotten across. Then again, the time was changed. So out of 13 or 16 on this committee, there were only 5 in-house. they don't hear your testimony. And I don't know exactly what that means or doesn't mean. Maybe those in opposition mean more. We'll see. Okay.
Well, thank you, Diane. I read your testimony. It was that's just excellent. It was excellent testimony. I appreciate all you've done. Bruce, do you have anything to add?
Yes. I hear an echo, or did. Anyway, as far as, yeah, the number of the people on that commission or in the meeting there, I didn't realize that it was that low a number until they started taking the vote, and they only got a few votes on it. So even though a whole lot of Me Toos weren't able to dial in and say Me Too, there was nobody, almost nobody there to hear it. I'm just wondering how many of the people on that committee were there at the start of the meeting in order to be able to have anything on the agenda and work it. I'm not too sure what the state policy is on that, you know.
Bruce, there were five when I logged on. There were four for a brief period of time when other bills were being heard. And then there were five again when I began my testimony.
Oh, okay. So they, anyways, that's one little thingy. During meeting, the other side, one of the commenters, I believe, was part of the Altamont Landfill Commission. And they said they've already got the $9 million set aside for payment. And with the Altamont Landfill meetings that I've listened to, I've never heard a vote on that yet. So I don't know where he was coming from on that. And otherwise, you know, what Diana was able to produce in her abrupted 3 minutes came across clear. She was at least able to talk a little bit slower so people could understand what she was saying as opposed to the opposition. There's one guy in there that was must have been a speed reader or something. But anyways, it was a good job. I'm glad that we got somebody that was able to get through and participate. That's it.
Yeah, this is Bruce Switcher. I was able to watch the hearing. And what they do with a committee hearing like that is they hold that for other votes to come in after the bill has been heard and they move on to other business. So we'll kind of have to watch the legislative website to see what the actual vote outcome is. But that will be made public eventually.
Right.
So I guess what everybody really wants to know is, do we have a snowball's chance, and you know where, to make a difference on this bill? And sorry if that sounds cynical, but this is the fifth year in a row that we've been fighting a very similar version of this bill. This year we have sort of a $9 million proposed blackmail payment, because I can't think of what else it would be used for. I don't know what good it's going to do or what the purpose of it is, but we have a real issue. Our lobbyist, Kathy, is suggesting that we find a reporter and actually get some newspaper articles expressing our knowledge and our opinion. So if anybody has any contact with press that would print an article or can help us with an article, that would be great. Because we're not sure what to do at this point. The only thing we can do is hope, like last time the governor did veto the bill that passed, actually sailed through the legislature in both houses, And he vetoed it, which was very much a surprise. But it was the right thing to do. And we're not sure this year if we could depend on the governor to do the same. So it's a very serious issue because we don't want to lose that 3,100 acres, and it was purchased by off-roaders for off-roaders with off-roaders' money. And there's no reason that other people should be able to steal it. So anybody have some media contacts, that would be great.
And something that I sent out an email to our board earlier today, and that's there is a minor change and significant one in the bill compared to previous years. In the previous years, it would allow the state parks to sell the property, and if they should choose to. In this one, it basically mandates that that property is no longer OHV property. So there's a significant difference in the two bills in that perspective. Thank you.
We really could use that property for, you know, for recreation. I'm on Carnegie's texting list, and it's been selling out every weekend as far as camping. We need more. That's one thing COVID has shown us. Okay, any questions about this? Go ahead. Who's this?
This is Brett Mendoza. It's going to touch on it again. But you guys were having an issue calling in, and that was a huge I understand that was a huge issue with this whole Carnegie thing. There's another foundation that's currently suing the Coastal Commission for the fact that they do the what are they called? Zoom calls? So basically what they're saying is that, like, the indigenous community in California is out of touch with Zoom, and they were able to lobby to get that. Like, not lobby, but they're suing them for that. And I'm wondering if that's not something that's within the envelope here. I have a note.
I'd like to weigh in, because I'll tell you, somewhere around 6 o'clock tonight, I wasn't just interested in suing someone. I was thinking seriously about, well, suicide, but the other side of it was seriously about who could I take out for this? Because it feels almost as if we were undermined. But when you look at this logically, this is so typical of how our community operates. We are working stiff. And the word came out at 4 o'clock that things were changed. The support of this bill had a way of getting to everyone who would be on that call. Maybe they didn't get to everyone. Maybe they had a lot more than 17 who were in support that called in. Clearly, their people giving testimony were feeling pressured and rushed. I thought I got the time for both people, and there was only me, so I felt like I had plenty of time. So I kind of took my time. But how do we get better? How do we have a communication structure so that when there's a change like this, we can get the word out quickly? I mean, I did the best that I can, and I admit to being in my 60s and technologically handicapped, shall we say. And so I got out emails, I got out texts, I got all kinds of things. But it didn't occur to me that the phone number would have changed. Now, Ed Stoven was able to get through because he immediately realized when he called in that he was listening to the wrong committee. I figure I have some supporters out there, some good friends of mine who are probably still on hold waiting for their name to be called. Because that's what we do when we decide we're going to support something and stand behind somebody. So I think we have to get better. I'm frustrated. I'm not going to deny that. but I think we just have to get better. This isn't about kicking and whining and saying, well, how dare you and all this. It is really about how do we get better? How do we empower a community to speak and use their voices appropriately and where needed? And I don't have an answer for you, but I don't think it's about berating the system. I think it's figuring out how to game the system.
And I have another note on that. There is a group whose entire advocacy is getting off-road vehicles off of public lands entirely, like the Center for Biodiversity. But a lot of what they do is they pay out for influencers. They pay out for just social media posts and whatnot. And then they will chip in for college students to make calls and stuff like you're saying. But they keep them on a network with, like, quick text messages or a group chat. So, like, on an iPhone, when you send a group chat message, everyone gets notified at once. And then you can work as one cohesive group. So maybe some changes on our end need to be made that way.
I was going to suggest that. Yeah, in you know, rush situations, a group chat or text are the most efficient way and fastest way to get the message out rather than an email. Because I'm as guilty as you, Diane. You know, I'm working away and I may not check my email until I get home after driving for an hour to get home. So, yes, there are ways we can get messages out quicker. All right. Well, thank you for all that. We have one last item. We are actually a little bit off schedule. We have Oceana Dunes on here. Who's want to take that? Want to take that one?
Well, I know Jared's not feeling well because he had messaged me earlier. So I think he's the most qualified to talk about it. But there are things that, of course, he and Mike McGarity, as members of the board of directors of Friends of Oceana Dunes, they can't talk about, too. So I'll just do a peripheral up-to-date. There are a number of lawsuits that have been filed, and number of lawsuits that have been filed or will be filed. The lawsuits are about the process that we use. So most lawsuits have something to do with either, for a state agency, a writ of mandate, which basically says, state agency, you did something wrong. And that is the job of the public. So when state agencies do something wrong or they are perceived to have alleged to have broken the law or violated statute is what how it's more correct to say, because it's not law, it's statute, on what they're supposed to do, the public can file a lawsuit and say, this is how you violated statute. And they're process-oriented lawsuits because they're about the process that was used to make a decision. And those lawsuits have a variety of different ways that they can be manifest. What they can do is they can make an agency go back and do something over again if the court deems that they didn't do it correctly in the first place. That's the good part about it. The less good part about it is that they can't change the law. So they can't change existing statute. And the biggest question we have with Oceana Dunes is, does the Coastal Commission have the power or have they been given statutorily the power to make the decision that they make? Can they force state parks hand? Can they do this? And that is the question that state parks has been wrestling with for, I know, for a long time. And it will end up the court deciding that some way, shape, or form. The strongest way to do that is if state parks would sue or enjoin one of the lawsuits. that would be the strongest way to have that happen. So the other way to look at it is to seek to change the law. And that's something that we're looking into now in different ways that we can accomplish it. In the beginning of the call, Lyndall Jane was on, and he is kind enough and to pass along the name of a land use consultant who he didn't know was an off-roader, but turns out to be an off-roader that we've met with and are getting ideas that we will be presenting. And on other avenues that we can take, including PR campaigns, including different ways to accomplish the goal. And what our goal is to complement the lawsuits, because it really is up to the people to hold state agencies accountable. We can't let them run roughshod over our rights and existing statute, and that we've heard from numerous people tonight about how the Coastal Commission didn't listen to any of us. They not only were extraordinarily rude, but I'm sure everyone feels the same way I did. It was difficult to listen to. I almost think they take pride in, if we say something, in endorsing the exact opposite. But so we support the lawsuits that are being filed. The more lawyers, the better. The more lawsuits, the better. The more spaghetti we can throw against the wall and see what sticks is better. And both attorneys are eminently qualified that are involved with this, between David Hubbard, who intervened with us on the Ocotillo Whales lawsuit a number of years ago when we prevailed on that lawsuit, and, of course, Tom Roth, who is a longtime attorney for Friends of Oceana Dunes. So other than that, the situation is difficult. State Parks does not know even if they can comply, although there are some elements in state parks that seem to want to comply with what the Coastal Commission has said. There are other elements that do not. And that's from my insider knowledge. There seem to be more that do not. So that's a good thing. But whether they'll have the support from the administration, we don't know. There's a lot of open questions. I'm sure everybody has a lot of questions they want to ask. Anybody wants to jump in, feel free.
Amy, I have something. This is Ed Stoven. I have something to add. I have a copy of the ecologic complaint in front of me. I've been reading it. And they're going, their big thing is the CEQA violation. They say, like all state and local agencies in California, the commission must comply with California Environmental Quality Act. And they're saying that CEQA requires that the lead agency assess and publicly disclose the project's potential to cause significant environmental impacts. Well, they didn't do. The Coastal Commission has done no CEQA work. So this looks pretty promising to me. I'm kind of pleased reading it. Like,
well, the Coastal Commission is not subject to CEQA in many areas, because the Coastal Commission is a regulatory commission. And that's why this wasn't a CEQA action, but it depends how the judge interprets it. That's when we have to depend and hope and cross our fingers that we get a judge who views things the same way as David Hubbard has written it there. But
okay, boy, yeah, that's a definite twist. They're also alleging violations with the Coastal Act. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, the lawsuits, they're on a lot of interesting subjects. I can see a lot of different areas where, you know, a judge may or may not agree with us. But I feel that the real answer is going to be changing the law. Although the lawsuits are very important, but they may just end up postponing it, because a lot of time, if it's a procedural issue, the judge will just tell them to go back and do it again. So we're going to have to look at every avenue possible in order to save Oceana Dunes, because every other SVRA will be right behind it. There's a little known BLM park up in Samoa, just north of Eureka, and they have dunes, and they're gonna have the Coastal Commission after them if they win at Oceana Dunes. It's just gonna empower all of the agencies and groups that are trying to get us off public lands if they win at Oceana Dunes. This is a battle that we must win. And we're coming up with some ideas, and we'll be announcing soon. Mike, do you have anything? Mike McGarity, do you have anything to bring up on Oceana that you could tell us?
Well, that's the question. What can I say?
Don't get yourself in trouble.
You're right. Amy did a great job talking on behalf of Corva and what Corva is working on. And Amy did a great job on not talking about some of the other things that Corva is working on that Ken, you alluded to, that there's things in the works. And so I think the most important thing to let people on the call know is that we've heard it before, you know, we're working on this behind the scenes. And you don't know until later that, I'll be damned, they were working on this behind the scenes. So there's a lot smarter people than me that are doing a lot of good work behind the scenes. Ecological Partners were clearly doing a lot of work behind the scenes that we weren't aware of until just recently. And so I'm glad to hear what Ed Stoven said about how well it's written. So hopefully that is what Amy says, you know, hopefully that sticks. You know, like Amy said, we got to throw as much as we can against the wall, and then just be, you know, praying and having positive thoughts towards, you know, this coming to a day in court where we have a judge that really sees things with an open lens and a different perspective. And so Jared's been working his tail end off. Jim Studi, Friends of Oceana Dunes, there's, you know, 5 to 6 hours of conversation that we can have just about all of the things that are going on there. And I can just assure you that that Friends of Oceana Dunes is 100,000% all in. Completely all in. There's no holds bar. And it's great to see Ecological Partners jumping in. It's great to hear things that are going on behind the scenes and in front of, and what's been shared tonight through Corva. So clearly, echoing what Ken just said about, we have to win in Oceana Dunes. Otherwise, Amy's hearing it. Others have been hearing that the other SVRAs are next chopping block, and we just gotta hold strong and all come back together. Stay focused. Keep calling in. Don't give up. And let's all be at the table. You know, and continue to fight. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there's two more elements I'm going to add to what Mike said. Very well said, Mike. One is that we still have the park now. So for the next 3 years, it's still an SVRA, and not just a name only. We have to make sure that park is clean. There is no trash. We take care of it. We push the people at the park, whether it's Kevin Pierce or anyone else, say, what can we do to help? Sometimes it's difficult. They don't want volunteers. But we have to police a little bit each other, because I see on social media people complaining about trash, and that means our opponents see on social media people complaining about going to the dunes and seeing trash. So we have to make that park a model, and it's up to everyone who goes there to do that. And the second thing is The Forest Service doesn't end them every few years. National Visitor Use something. Bruce probably knows what the M stands for, monitoring. But they count the number of off-roaders in California, and there's been an estimate anywhere between 7 to 11 million off-roaders in California, and that's people who self-identify as off-roaders. If every single one of those people gave $10 to $20 to the efforts going on, whether it's they choose to Ecologic, Friends of Oceana Dunes, and to any of the other efforts that we bring forward, we can actually confront the Sierra Club. We won't have as much money as them, but we're tougher than they are. It's very funny. When push comes to shove, they when they think they're powerful, they act powerful, but they cave pretty easily when you confront them directly sometimes. But we are tough. We know how to do this. We know how to hit an obstacle, you know, the right way and choose your line carefully. If the entire off-road community in California, all of our friends, all of our family, all of our club members, if we get everybody to donate a little bit of money, it would make a huge difference. And that's something for everyone on the call to take back to their clubs. There's always a handful of people like Mike, like Jared, like Diana, Bruce. I mean, all the people on our board who are involved. But there's so many other people in California. I don't know if this doesn't inspire them. I don't know what would inspire them. And that's the message we have to take out, to take back to them. Money really does make a difference. And in this case, it can make a really big difference for a lot of these groups. So, you know, just know that you can make a difference. And everyone listening, take that message back.
I want to add one thing to that, Amy, because, you know, we have so many off-roaders in California, and people recreate off-road in so many different ways in so many different areas. I hear quite often, we're rock crawlers. We never go to Pismo. We don't care about Pismo. We don't go there. It's about every SVRA in California. It's about all of our Forest Service land. It's about preserving OHV in California. We lose this one, like I said, it's going to empower them, and we will be fighting forever. We need to put a stop to it now. So we need to get that message out to everybody, too. They need to be involved whether they go there or not. So share that message with all your friends. Go ahead. Who's this?
This is Brett again. So sorry, I'm going to be interrupting your call all night.
Not a problem.
One of the things the opposition did in Oceano was they went out and they, like, went door-to-door pretty much in Guadalupe, suggesting to everyone there that they don't want OHV in their area. They don't want those kind of people coming through here because they all fly, like, Confederate flags, and they don't like your kind pretty much. So that really what is put the nail on the coffin as far as the Guadalupe, and when they were trying to move the campgrounds to that side of town, that town was fully against it because they had this image put in their head that OHV was going to be this group of malicious people to their community. And I really think that we need to turn that narrative and maybe do some outreach there. If off-roaders can go patronize that side of town, or even Pismo and Ocean, or Pismo and then like Atascadero. Is it Atascadero right there? I think so. But there needs to be a little bit of outreach. And then two, the only economic studies they did were Google searches saying that it would be better for OHV. So if we could get an economic study about how much OHV does help this state, that would be huge. I think that would be bigger than all the lawsuits, is showing how much revenue OHV generates for our state. And there was one tad of information I found, but it was written up by REI and the Sierra Club. But they still said that we were, you know, $88 billion of tax revenue for our state. So, and that was, I think that was motorcycles. If we were to do like an honest review of how much money OHV generates for the state of California, it can completely change the tide of all of this. That's all.
You're very correct. You're correct on that. Okay. That brings us till 9 o'clock, which is our time to end the meeting. Next week, or next month, on the 24th of May, will be our actual annual meeting, and we will be holding elections. The president's position, I am up for re-election if I'm open to doing it again. If anybody wants to run, I welcome you running. We have VP of Administration, which is a very work-intensive job. It's basically running the business of Corvette. That position is open. VP of Sales and Marketing is up, and also Secretary. So get your nominations in for those positions. If you're interested in those positions, let us know. We also have the announcements for all of our awards. If you have any organization that is you feel deserves an award, one of our awards, please send that nomination in. And with that, and anybody, unless if anybody else has something to say, I'm going to ask that we have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Say again, is this meeting tonight
part
of our
right.
annual meeting?
That's right. We are going to, we are, Amy?
The official annual meeting is May 24th, but usually at our annual meeting, we do part of the meeting, we talk about the issues facing California, and the other part, we do the business of the annual meeting, which is specifically the voting and awards and the announcement of the past president's award. That is what constitutes the annual meeting. And so that part will be on May 24th at 7 p.m., same number.
Just to be on the safe side, why don't we recess this meeting until May 24th, and we will continue
yes.
then. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that the Corvette 2021 annual meeting that we are partially participating in this evening take a break, and we will resume at 7 p.m. on May 24th at 7 p.m.
Thank you, Bruce.
You're welcome.
Do we have a second?
This is Jared. I'll second.
Thank you, Jared. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye, aye.
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 All those opposed? And those abstaining. Okay, everybody, thank you for being on the meeting. A big thank you to all of our special guests. This was very informative, and we'll see you soon.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Have a good night,
everyone.
Thank you.